Greetings and welcome to Higher Ground Live. I'm your host, Pastor Massad, bringing you greetings from atop Higher Ground's World Headquarters this Friday, the 20th day of October, 2006. And we're joining you today, as we do every day at this time, fighting the revisionists, fighting disinformation, fighting the spin doctors. That's right, we're busy forming a band of rival elites that will stand against those elites that are trying to take over this nation. We're busy forming a band of rival elites that will stand against those global elites that are trying to take over this planet. And we do all of that by cultivating people. People like you. People like you who will cause the elites to retreat. That's what we do here on Higher Ground Live. That's what we do here at Higher Ground Bible College. And that's what we do here on this great Truth Radio Network as we broadcast around the world and across this great nation. We are busy empowering people like you with truth, so that you can impact the lives of your neighbors, so that you can impact the lives of your friends, so that you can impact the lives of your families and coworkers. As always, we are standing firm on the front line of the war on people because we are a constant voice of reason and blessed to be coming to you from atop Freedom's Command Center, where we are regularly maintaining and regaining liberty. Friends, it is a pleasure to have you here with us today. I want to thank Mark Stevens for guest hosting for me last night. I could not be here. I was traveling, and I want to thank Mark Stevens for filling in for me. You know, I just want to take a moment to, before we get into our guest here today, I want to take a moment to point out the, I know Mark talked about it last night, the recent, turned out to be a bogus terror threat with seven NFL stadiums being hit with dirty bombs this coming Sunday. Friends, I just want to tell you, I'm going to stick by what I've said for the last couple of months. This is the most dangerous time in our history. The rhetoric prior to the midterm election has been ratcheted up to the highest level ever. There is a serious move afoot to change power here in the nation, and that would spell disaster for George Bush and company. And so I go on record and stay on record as saying these things are all no coincidence. I don't believe for a second that there's any coincidence in it. And I'm saying what I've said all along. Between now and the midterm elections, between now and Thanksgiving at the latest, very dangerous time. I still believe the intention is, if at all possible, for a nuclear event. And I just say, the more that we let people know, I appreciated all the people who called today and said, you know, we're seeing this, and we're letting people know. We've got to continue to let people know. If the powers that be believe that everyone will realize that they are the ones that did it, they would not dare do it. And so I'm going to kind of maintain that. And by way of a program note, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, this coming Monday, we will be live with Dr. Sam Kennedy, and he'll be talking extensively about what you'll see at his boot camp seminar, the Sam Kennedy Boot Camp, on November 4th and 5th in Rockland, Massachusetts. And we'll talk a little bit more about that, but you do not want to miss that, friends. I got a call from our people there today. It is filling up quickly. There are only a few more seats left. So if you're serious about going to that, we'll get back to you shortly in the show with how to get signed up for it. But it is a limited capacity, and Dr. Sam is one of our favorite guests, if not the favorite, and it's filling up quickly. But friends, I want to bring someone in here today, and I want to welcome him to our show. The show we're going to talk about tonight is pretty much right up the alley of what we normally consider and what we normally discuss. But I want to welcome Eric Huru from Arkansas. Eric, how are you today?
I'm just fine, Pastor. How are you this evening?
I'm very well, thank you. Now, our connection isn't the best, so I need you to speak up as much as possible, because I want everyone to hear what you have to say. Now, for the most part, it's interesting that we are having this show here at this time, because we've been really looking at some methods that are helping to prevail in court, and there's an awful lot of the patriots have been, what can I say? I want to say, dancing in the patriot methodologies. Some people would call it mythologies for a long time, with a greater or lesser degree of success, and many of them, quite frankly, a lesser degree of success. And you have not got a whole lot of use for the typical run-of-the-mill patriot methodologies, correct?
That's correct. I was been in it since 1964, and I've been through most all of what everybody else has done. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. A lot of times the reason it does work is simply because the system is overloaded, so it lets you skate through. In all of my work trying to figure out exactly what would work, I finally decided to do my own homework, went back to the very beginning, and I mean by the very beginning, July 4th, 1776, and in studying what happened there, I came to a clear understanding that government does not exist in nature. That's a fundamental fact that everybody just seems to miss. Government does not exist in nature. Six very, very important words. All government is created by men as fictional entities. After July 4, 1776, George Washington and his friends decided they wanted to create a government. Actually, it was before that. I'm, you know, skipping a little bit. I acknowledge there was the Articles of Confederation and all that, but just fast forward a little bit. And the men who formed the Constitution and the government under it had every right to do that for anybody who chose to volunteer into that political fiction. But they had no authority whatsoever to command any of those who did not volunteer in to be subject to that government. This is a basic fundamental that they can't get around. It's absolutely like axiomatic. The government does not exist in nature. The only authority the government can have is the government that the individuals who form the government have, and if an individual who formed the government, like George Washington, Alexander Hamilton, Benjamin Franklin, all of those guys, great men, you know, all of them, but if they did not have the individual authority to command anyone to participate in the government, then there's no way the government could have that authority. And of course, none of them had any individual authority to command anybody to participate in the government, and so therefore the only way that you can be subject to the government is by your voluntary act. And you have to volunteer yourself. John Jay, first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, in a case called Chisholm versus Georgia, 1794, about the second page of his opinion, he wrote that upon the Revolution, the former subjects of King George became joint tenants in the sovereignty, but none to govern but themselves. That was just dicta. That had nothing really to do with the case Chisholm versus Georgia. That was just his reasoning for his decision. Fast forward to 1866 and the 13th Amendment. And the 13th Amendment's prohibition of involuntary servitude constitutes a casting in stone of John Jay's opinion in Chisholm versus Georgia, where the 13th Amendment provides involuntary servitude shall not exist in the United States and in any place under their jurisdiction. So in order for you to become subject to the jurisdiction of the United States, you've got to volunteer. It has to be a voluntary act. In order for an act to be voluntary, it has to be knowingly, willingly, and intentionally done with the person who is volunteering being fully informed of everything that he's giving up and everything that he's getting into. When was anybody ever informed that by claiming to be a citizen of the United States that they were giving up their personal individual sovereignty? Never happened.
Okay, now Eric, I'm on point with you. I'm following what you're saying, and you're preaching to the choir here. However, when you stand in court and you say, I'm not subject to you, because it sounds like what you're saying, they say, sorry, you are subject to us.
Well, I would never do that. I would never tell them that I'm not subject to their jurisdiction. If I were to be standing in court, I would probably say something like this. The first thing they do is they ask you your name for the record. I don't have a name. A name is, and this is not what I would say, but just as an explanation. A name is that designation which is assigned to property by the owner thereof. As I don't have an owner, I am not anybody's property, and I don't have a name. So when they would ask me in court to state my name for the record, I would say, just a minute, before we go any further, we have here an issue of political jurisdiction. This fictional entity here that you are operating is part of a fictional government that does not exist in nature, so therefore you have to establish your political jurisdiction over me when your 13th Amendment prohibits you from doing. So you, and you are asking me to state my name for the record. Before you can require me to state anything, you first have to prove that I am subject to your jurisdiction. And why are you asking me to state my name for the record? By the way, I don't know what a name is or how anybody gets one, so therefore it's impossible for me to state my name for the record. But before we can get to the point where you can require me to do that, you've got to establish how you have political jurisdiction over me in the face of your 13th Amendment's prohibition from you doing it. I would say something like that.
Okay, so to our coming down to the jurisdictional question issue.
But Pastor, it's not just jurisdiction. I don't like the word jurisdiction by itself. You have to state political jurisdiction because there's too many flavors of jurisdiction. So I want to narrow it down to the fundamental basic jurisdiction, which is political jurisdiction. All of their other jurisdictions, personal jurisdiction or subject matter jurisdiction, flow from political jurisdiction.
Okay. Let me create a for instance here in the roughly 1 minute we have until the break. For instance, let's just say that a crime was committed allegedly by you. I'm going to make it a severe crime. We'll just leave out what the severe crime could be. There's lots of them. A severe crime, I could see that a judge might sit there and say, excuse me, but while you are in this country, you are subject to me.
I would object at that. I would object at that point. Whenever he said that, I'm saying, I beg your pardon. You might tell that to somebody else who doesn't know any better. But on July 4, 1776, the rebels picked up their rifles and pointed the business end at the redcoats and drove them out. At that point of time, everybody became politically equal. That is, everybody became politically sovereign over their own personal entity. And there isn't any way that any government formed up after that date could possibly claim to have political jurisdiction over me just because I happen to be here. If you don't have political jurisdiction over me man to man, then you can't delegate any such jurisdiction to the government to claim it has any kind of jurisdiction over me. Sorry, don't work.
All right, hold on. We'll be right back, friends, after this break here on Higher Ground Live, the most powerful hour in talk radio. 1-800-710-1099. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Pastor Massett. This is Higher Ground Live, the most powerful hour in talk radio. Now, well into our fourth year on the air, approaching our 800th show. We will hit over 1,000 shows this year. Friends, there is a seminar coming up November 4th and 5th in Rockland, Massachusetts. It is the Sam Kennedy Boot Camp. You do not want to miss it. It'll be all about understanding the constitutional and commercial methods which allow you to control the courtroom, which allow you to control your various agency cases. This is a two-day intensive marriage of commerce and constitution. It's never been held before. You've never seen anything like you will see on this this weekend. Sam Kennedy is coming with both barrels locked and loaded with more specific technology than you've ever seen at any one time. You will have immediate answers to your problems. You're in the middle of a case, you're in the middle of something that's going south. This is the seminar for you. As a matter of fact, at the very beginning of it, Sam will be passing out what he calls a double barrel CD, which will have all of the paperwork that he's going to teach at this meeting on it. And it will immediately show you commerce and admiralty and how they're designed to close cases very quickly, some incredible procedures. He calls this bag of tricks, if I can call it that, weapons of mass reconstruction. You know, we all took note as his instant affidavit, just amazing, amazing piece of work, just swept across the country here in the last month or 6 weeks. And basically, these methods that he will bring out on this weekend are absolutely designed to change the rules of the game. This meeting is about specific answers. It's about specific technologies. If you have never attended a seminar before, you've got to get this one. If you've attended every seminar before and come up dry, you've got to get to this one. Intensive Boot Camp, November 4th and 5th in Rockland, Massachusetts. That's just south of Boston. And if you would like to go, you want to call Jim, 617-947-6338. That's Jim at 617-947-6338. Friends, I've got to tell you, I've spoken with Jim today. There are a few seats left, but it is going very, very quickly. This will be sold out, and unfortunately, they are limited to space. So get in touch with Jim at 617-947-6338, Sam Kennedy's Intensive Boot Camp. Today, though, we're back online here with Eric Huru. And Eric, I like the way you talk. You go right back to the basics. You know, I had an opportunity to be a consultant for a long time to businesses, and I found out whenever they got in trouble, it was always because they had drifted away from the basics. Sounds to me like you're trying to bring people back to the basics.
That's the only place that you can get any sense of it, out of anything, Pastor, because if you don't have logic and reason, if you don't fully understand it yourself, now the seminar that you were just talking about requires all kinds of study, requires a thorough knowledge. I used to give seminars like that, and they're great, and there's a lot of very, very good information there. But the problem that I found was so much of that standard Patriot approach. No matter how good the information is, that the people who gather the information, the attendees, they don't really understand it for themselves. They want somebody else to have done all the work, so all they have to do is print out some paperwork and put their name in and then file it with the court, and they think that everything is just going to be hunky-dory and the problem is going to go away.
Yeah, and then they get in front of the court and the judge asks three questions that they weren't anticipating, and they just drop down to their knees and they have no idea what to say. The judge says one of the things left, and gavel down, and all of a sudden you're leaving in handcuffs.
That's exactly right, and that's why I say.
That's really a very good point, because one of the things I want to make clear, people who understand who Sam Kennedy is will understand that this particular seminar will be much different. However, you make one good point. No matter who you are, to whatever methodology you're going to use, you better understand it completely. You know, one of the things to say about the method that I know Sam intends to get into, unlike what we're all familiar with extensive details in commerce and admiralty and everything else, he has simplified things by way of resting much more on the Constitution. But let's stay with your method here for a minute. I don't even want to contrast it. I want to understand a lot about what you have, because, again, you're back to the basics, and I want to understand what you have here.
Well, Pastor, it's really impossible not to contrast it, because what my approach is, no Constitution.
Let's let the listeners contrast.
You got it.
And you and I can discuss your method in detail.
No Constitution, none of this admiralty, none of this Uniform Commercial Code, none of this commerce, none of that applies to anyone who understands that the government does not exist in nature, because the only way that all of those items can have any effect is if the person who's going in there acknowledges that the government exists, because the government is the one that created the Uniform Commercial Code, the Admiralty, all of that stuff was all created by the government. So if you deny the government's existence and you thereby deny the government's jurisdiction over you, none of those things come into play.
All right, one of the things that kind of sounds interesting in what you're talking about, I go back to the original Declaration of Independence written by Thomas Jefferson. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. And it goes on from there. And so you're right.
There's only one problem there. Thomas Jefferson did not write the Declaration of Independence. It was written by Thomas Paine. I have a book on his thick that absolutely proves that. But just to make the point, Thomas Paine is actually the actual father of our form of government here, although he wasn't here at the time the Constitution was written, because he was cooling his heels in the French Bastille, courtesy of George Washington. But that's another whole long story. But all of the things that are set forth in the Declaration of Independence apply to individuals the same as they do to a group of people, because actually there's no such thing as a group of people. Every group of people is comprised of the individuals, and there's no individual among what is called a group that has any ability to exercise or claim to have any political jurisdiction over any other member of the group.
Well, we sure have a bunch of them around today who think they can.
Well, that's because nobody ever points out to them or asks them the question or points out to them, just a minute, the government does not exist in nature. We're going to stop right there, and we're going to get an agreement on that. Do governments exist in nature? Does government grow on trees like apples do? Is there a tree out there that grows governments in nature? Governments are only created by the intellectual activities of men, just like the Boy Scouts. There's no difference whatsoever in the fictitious entity known as the Boy Scouts of America and the United States of America. Both of those organizations are created by the intellectual activity of men, and nobody would ever pay any attention to the Boy Scouts if the Boy Scouts were to claim that it had political jurisdiction to make a claim that every boy, when they reaches the age of 11 years old, is automatically a Boy Scout. It's exactly the same thing. There's no difference whatsoever.
Okay, why do I think that a judge is going to ignore your argument and say, do you have anything else, sir?
Because he's tied by the 13th Amendment. So far, I haven't had any difficulty in having it recognized.
Eric, hold on for a second. So you have actually won some cases with this?
Yes, I have.
That gives you a fair amount of credence.
You see, the first one that I won was in 1970 in tax court in Los Angeles. I didn't even know that I had won, because I didn't even know what I was doing. I had not a clue. I walked out of tax court after 5 minutes on a 1040 form that had been created by the IRS claiming that I owed some $240,000 to the government for taxes, penalties, and interest and whatever. We never ever got past the opening statement of the prosecutor. He stated, Your Honor, citizens of the United States have an obligation to blah, 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 listing off things. I said, just a minute, I object. The judge says, why are you objecting, Mr. Williams? He hasn't said anything yet. My name used to be Williams. I changed it to Uru. That's W-H-O-R-U. Because I didn't want to be Williams, I want to have a name that projects what I do, and what I do is point out to you who you are. But anyway, the judge asked me, why are you objecting? He hasn't said anything yet. And I said, well, he said citizens of the United States have an obligation to do all those things that he was listing, and that may very well be the case. But he doesn't have anything in his file to put me in that class. The judge said, are you renouncing your citizenship? I said, how can I renounce that which I never applied for? He said, where were you born? I said, oh, I don't know where I was born. At the time that I was born, I'd just gone through a terrible ordeal. I was gasping for breath. I could neither read nor write. I didn't know who I was, where I was, nor even what I was. That's the status of a newborn baby. He then asked me what my mother told me. I said, I'm sorry, but prior to my birth, I did not understand the concept of mother, and upon my birth, nobody explained it to me. I didn't have the cognitive ability to understand it anyway. I could not have picked my mother out of the lineup of one. He then said, what did it say on your birth certificate? Well, I said, well, pretty much the same answer. I did not understand the concept of a birth certificate before I was born, and at the time of my birth, nobody showed me one, and nobody explained to me at the time that I was born how important this document was, and so I don't know if any such document was created regarding my birth, and I deny that any was, and he can't prove it, pointing at the prosecutor. The judge then said that he would take it under advisement and that I would be notified. That was 36 years ago.
You mean he has not gotten back to you yet?
What?
He has not gotten back to you yet?
Not yet. And after that, I operated a very successful manufacturing company in California for 22 years. I never was ever contacted by the IRS except one time. After I'd been in business for 4 or 5 years, I was coming out to get in my car to go call on a customer. And two IRS agents pulled up in one of those white government cars, and they spoke to me by name. Obviously, they had seen my picture on thousands of flyers that we had mailed out or passed out regarding the tax rebellion that I was previously active in. They asked me if I would help them by identifying my endorsement on a $2,000 cashier's check that I had received as payment for some work I did for somebody, before I got in the furniture business. And I asked those two agents, I said, you're asking me to help you prosecute somebody regarding their income tax? And they said, well, yes, that was what it was. And I said, well, I'm sorry, I can't believe that you would ask me to do that. I don't see you, the check, or anything else. Please leave me alone. And I turned away and got my card and left. That's the only contact that I ever had with the IRS. Obviously, they know what I was doing. They know how to find me. They never ever questioned the fact that I never filed a tax return.
All right, we're going to talk more about this when we come back. Friends, I'm Pastor Massad. We are live with Eric Huru. That's W-H-O-R-U. And if he says it, I'm Eric. Who are you? I'm Pastor Massad. 1-800-710-1099 or email me at Pastor Massad, M-A-S-S-A-D, at HigherGroundBibleCollege.com. That's Pastor Massad at HigherGroundBibleCollege.com. We'll be right back after this break. Stay with us. We're live with Eric Huru on the most powerful hour in talk radio. 1-800-710-1099. I'm Pastor Massad. This is Higher Ground Live's most powerful hour in talk radio. By way of a program note, Monday night we will be live with Dr. Sam Kennedy. He'll be giving all the lowdown on what to expect on his two-day intensive seminar, Sam Kennedy Boot Camp, and that's November 4th and 5th in Rockland, Massachusetts. There are a couple seats left. It will be sold out. Don't waste any time. Call Jim at 617-947-6338. That's 617-947-6338. Talk to Jim November 4th and 5th, Rockland, Massachusetts, just south of Boston. Right now, though, we're going back to Eric. Who are you? I love the way you put that, Eric. I'm Eric. Who are you? Eric, you're making a great point here. This could all be so simple as to say, excuse me, but show me where you have any jurisdiction over me. And I know you're saying a little more eloquently than that, but that's really what it boils down to, right?
That's absolutely true. And I never will tell them that they don't have jurisdiction because then I've got to prove it. So the way to handle this is you raise the issue so they have to prove it.
Okay, that's well stated. As a matter of fact, that is a particular methodology that we've kind of uncovered here in the last 6 months or less that makes so much more, it makes it so much easier when they have to prove something rather than you having to prove it. However, let me just play the judge for a second. Well, Mr. Huru, or whoever you are, I can assure you that I have jurisdiction. I'm not interested in your frivolous arguments. Have a seat and be quiet.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm not going to have a seat, and it's not a frivolous argument. You have taken an oath to support and defend the Constitution, which includes the 13th Amendment. You don't get to sit up there and tell me that you have jurisdiction. You've got to present proof, and you better do it now because I'm out of here. No matter what you say, you don't have jurisdiction over me unless you present proof. The 13th Amendment, your 13th Amendment, which governs you, prohibits you from declaring that I have volunteered. That's called involuntary servitude, and the restraint is on you. I don't have to prove that I did not volunteer. You're the one who's making the claim. You got to prove it. And you just because you have power, that doesn't mean you have authority. So I'm not going to sit down. I'm not going to do anything else. There's nothing that I can do to stop you from doing whatever you're going to do, but I'm not going to participate. I'm out of here. Goodbye.
Okay, now let's continue. All right, very well stated. That you're doing a good job with that. For the record, I'm giving you a hard time here because I want to really see.
That's fine.
And I know you don't mind that.
Not at all.
So now let me come out of the judge role for a second and take off the pretty black dress, and let me ask you a question. The judge then, I would think, could ask a question, for example, and now this may be different for you, so I want you to, if you would, think in terms of the rank and file.
Well, they ask all kinds of questions. They ask all kinds of questions, so go ahead.
All right, so, yeah, but I want you to think of this not in terms of you, because I don't know where you stand on this, but what about the guy who has a driver's license and it has bank accounts and all those things that kind of do show that he's a resident, a citizen, whatever you want to call him.
I'm sorry. None of that works. Goes back to something I said earlier here, that in order for someone to voluntarily give up their personal individual sovereignty, they've got to have notice. We have immigrants. The 14th Amendment provides all persons born or naturalized in the United States. when we have someone coming here from North Korea or Communist China, and they want to apply for citizenship, they've got to go through an indoctrination class. They have to take a test. They have to stand up in court and consciously, willingly, and intentionally renounce their former sovereign and swear an allegiance to the United States. When did anybody do that? Anybody born here ever do that? Never.
Well, never.
So therefore, everyone who was born here is still under their own individual personal sovereignty. And by the way, it's impossible, get this, it's impossible for anybody to be born in the United States. Never has happened, never will happen. It's as impossible for anybody to be born in the United States as it is impossible for anybody to be born in the Boy Scouts. The United States is a fictitious entity, as is the Boy Scouts. If a pregnant woman was at Boy Scout camp and she happened to give birth to her baby unexpectedly in the Boy Scout camp, would that baby automatically be a Boy Scout? What if it was a girl? You cannot be born into a fictitious entity. It's impossible.
I'm laughing because that is a good point. You cannot be born into a fictitious entity. It's impossible. That's great.
So the only way that you can possibly be deemed to have been born into the United States is for you to have claimed it. Until you claim it, they can't do it. And boy, does it tie them in knots whenever they have conversations with me and they ask me my name. I say, "What? Just a minute. What is a name? What do you mean? Are you giving me a hard time? Everybody knows what a name is." I said, "Well, I'm not so sure that I do, because my understanding of what a name is that a name is that designation which is given to property by the owner thereof. So in order for me to have a name, I would first have to have an owner, right? So who is my owner? I claim that I own me. Therefore, I have decided not to name myself, and so therefore I don't have a name, and you tell me how you can possibly demand or command me to have a name. Where do I get the name, by the way? How would I get such a thing?" And they will respond back and say, "Well, your parents told you." "I beg your pardon? How could I possibly know who my parents are? Newborn babies don't have any ability to even acknowledge that they are a baby. How could they possibly acknowledge who their parents are? 9 months removed, for the father at least." No. So it's totally impossible for you to explain to me in any reasonable way how it is that I could come by a name. How can a name be tacked onto me? I've been in the birthing room at least 2 times, and I saw babies exit their mother, and I looked very closely. There was no name tag attached.
Now, it's interesting that the way you're presenting this. Now, I want to look at a couple things here. One is, again, going back to the Declaration, that we're endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, and the government is only created to protect those rights. And certainly, that government, if the rights of the individual are unalienable, then the government cannot trounce upon those rights.
That's exactly right. The only way that the government can get any control over those rights is if the individual, willingly, intentionally, knowingly, being fully informed of the consequences, submits himself to the jurisdiction of the fictitious political entity, just like the Boy Scouts.
So let me go one step further then. And so now, what I really see here is really a, and I'm going to ask you to hold your comment for a second, is really a marriage of what we've been teaching recently with the constitutional method versus admiralty and commerce, though we still see some little advantages in that, or some advantages in that, but the constitutional methodologies that we've been talking about really get to the heart of it, but yet you take that, and what you do is you go one step further, you say, yeah, the constitutional method's okay, we're going to hold a judge to that, but as for me, show me where I knowingly, willingly even came into that. Correct?
That's correct, but one point there, it wouldn't make any difference if the 13th Amendment was there or not. That just helps to give us like an anchor point to point to, but the 13th Amendment really didn't change anything. All it did was write down what was already self-evident. On July 4, 1776, all of the former subjects of King George became politically equal, with none having any more political authority than any other, so it would be impossible for any group of them to form a government where that government could claim to have jurisdiction over any who opts out, and certainly not over any who were not born.
Do you see any legitimate function of the government? And I don't mean this crazy white elephant that's around the nation?
Well, my name is not Mark Stevens, and I think his No State Project totally sucks, and that's what the reason that I got on RBN Live is because I criticized him, and John Stoudemire asked me to put a show on. Much of what Mark Stevens and I say sounds like the same program, but I am very, very much in favor of a very strong government. If the Indians, those who recall Indians, the natives of this continent where we live, had a strong central government when Columbus discovered America purportedly, we might not be here. And what language do those Indians speak? English. No, I'm very, very much in favor of a very strong central government, but there's no possible way that we can possibly have a government where the people are truly free when the government has any ability whatsoever to finance itself through taxation.
Wait a minute. I want to call you on something here. A very strong central government, how strong? How central? Who does it govern?
We need a constitutional revision here. There's about a half a dozen things that are totally left out of the Constitution. The first article of the Constitution should be, whereas it we freely recognize that governments do not exist in nature. That has to be the basic premise of the very first words in the Constitution, and everything after that has to acknowledge that. And the second article would be something like, in recognition of the first article, no one can be deemed to be subservient or owe any allegiance to this government unless they intentionally, freely, willingly volunteer being fully informed of the consequence. And number three would be, under no circumstances will this government ever fund itself by any coercive means called taxation, which is nothing but a euphemism for armed robbery.
Well, there, you agree with Mark Stevens there. Let me ask you, though, let's look at this government. So now we have a government that, what does that government do? And
there's only one legitimate function of government. The only government, the only power that government can properly have is the power that I, as one individual man, has. I have the power, rather, excuse me, I'm using the wrong word, I'm talking about authority. I have the authority to tell trespassers to stay off my property, and I have the authority to tell thieves to keep their hands off my property. And I have, and so does everybody else, likewise have that same authority. But as individual men, we have very limited power, only the power of one man or one woman, for that, whichever the case may be. So we obviously have, if we have that authority, we also have the authority to combine our individual power and grant our authority to a man we call the sheriff, and we can then delegate to him our authority to keep trespassers off. But inasmuch as I have no individual personal authority to tell you that you can't smoke marijuana, nor do you have any individual personal authority to tell me that I can't smoke marijuana, nor does anybody else have any such individual authority, it becomes impossible for us to grant any such authority to the government, so it's impossible for the government to prohibit anybody from smoking marijuana. And I don't drink coffee, smoke cigarettes, drink alcohol, I don't take any kind of drugs, and I think anybody smoking marijuana is an idiot. That's not the point. The point is the government has no authority from us to tell anybody they can't smoke marijuana. You give them an inch, we'll take a mile.
Fact, friends. I'm Pastor Mathis. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Pastor Mathis. This is Higher Ground Live, the most powerful hour in talk radio. We're live with Eric Huru from Arkansas. Eric, I am impressed with the simplicity of your methodology here. One thing that is common, a common thread with what you have to say and what Dr. Kennedy has to say and what our commerce people and our straw man redemption people all have to say is it all comes down to one, really comes down to one thing, and that is you've got to know who you are.
Well, that's absolutely true, and on that point, if you don't mind, I'd like to give my my Yahoo group and my phone number.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
So my Yahoo group is no www in there. It's just straight https://groups.yahoo.com/group/whoru. And my Monday telephone...
Wait a second. You went a little fast on that. So it's It's the regular http://groups.yahoo.com/group.
Correct.
What was after group?
Slash W-H-O-R-U. Who are you? But it's five characters, W-H-O-R-U.
All right, so it's just so that our listeners can get it again. It's http://groups.yahoo.com/group/huru, which is W-H-O-R-U. Who are you?
That's correct. And my Monday evening conference call at 8 p.m. Central Time is area code 319-256-0500, access code 403349, pound sign. That's 319-256.
One second. Why don't we go back to the access code for a second?
403349, pound.
Okay, so I'll repeat it. If I get it wrong, you can tell me. So what time is that on Monday night?
8 o'clock Central.
All right, so at 8 p.m. Central Time, the access code to get to a conference that you have is, the telephone number is 319-256-0500, and then the PIN number is 403349, pound.
That is correct.
Now, do you have an email address also that you want to give out?
Really rather not. I get so many emails, but if people call in on the call, they can ask questions there, and also if they go on the website, my email address is there.
Okay, that's fine. So we've got the call, and we've got your you said website, you meant Yahoo Group.
That's correct. It's not a website. It's Yahoo Group.
All right, very good. So do we have a caller here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go to Yahoo and type in Eric Guru, and he comes up first place in Google and Yahoo.
Okay, great. Where's our caller from?
From Kansas.
Okay, caller from Kansas. Do you have any questions you have?
How does he want to get rid of the all taxes?
All right, we got a good question from a caller here, Eric.
Well, that goes right along with what I said just a few moments ago. That the Constitution needs to have a provision in it that very clearly states that under no circumstances will this government ever be funded by what armed robbery, which is euphemistically called taxation. So obviously we need a different form of funding of the government, which is already in place right now. We can eliminate all taxation in the entire country. And I really do like the income tax. Why? Because it makes everybody mad. If we replace the income tax with a fair tax or the flat tax, then everybody will just pay that. Nobody will be mad anymore, and we'll never correct the real problem, which is armed robbery, which is taxation. So if we, all we need to do really, and we have all kinds of things from the patriot community about how bad the income tax is and all that, and how bad the Federal Reserve is, most of those people, including Congressman Ron Paul, who I've had tried to get several email responses from, never got one yet. He always wants to get rid of the Federal Reserve, but he never ever talks about what is going to replace it. We got 300 million people in this country who use these phony Federal Reserve notes every day to feed their kids and pay for everything else. We don't just turn the Federal Reserve off overnight, which is another problem that I have with Aaron Russo and From Freedom to Fascism, which is a wonderful movie, but no place in there does he offer any solutions. We need a solution here that is viable, that gets rid of the income tax and all taxations, sales tax, property tax, whatever kind of tax you want to talk about, and fund the government, every level of government, with the profits that are now made by our closed-end, privately-owned Federal Reserve system. The Federal Reserve isn't nearly as bad as all the patriot community makes it out to be, because none of them, and I challenge them time and time again, to come on and discuss it with me, none of them ever have yet. The Federal Reserve isn't even all bad. In fact, I even go so far as to say the total blasphemy is that the Federal Reserve is the best invention that has ever come along, including the wheel. That's a pretty strong statement, and I can back it up, but we don't really have enough time to go into that thoroughly, just enough to say here that we could take the profits of the Federal Reserve and credit them to the government and use those to pay all the bills of the government. I did a computation here 8 or 10 years ago where I figured out that the interest profits, so-called profits, of the Federal Reserve are about 6 times more than all the taxes that are collected by every level of government in the entire country. So we don't need to, although we should, shut down Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, age-dependent children, and all those other phony government programs. We don't have to cut any of those back in order to change the method of the funding of the government from armed robbery, which we currently use, to a total voluntary system, because nobody is required to take out a loan on their home or anything else. The Patriot community continually says that all money is created out of Federal Reserve notes, is created out of thin air, and that there's no backing behind it. That's half true. It's true as it pertains to all of the money that is created to fund the government, but it's not true at all for any of the Federal Reserve notes that are created to fund the private sector. Every private sector loan, whether it's a business or a corporation or for your home mortgage on your house, is guaranteed by your promise to pay it back. And when you, after you sign that contract, you work your butt off for 30 years to pay the interest and the principal. So for the Patriot community to make a claim that there is no backing behind Federal Reserve notes is totally bogus. They say that Federal Reserve notes are nothing but IOUs. That's true. There's nothing really wrong with an IOU when the maker of the IOU is an honorable person who pays off his IOUs. The government of the United States is so dishonorable that it stinks, and it never intends and is totally incapable of honoring any of its IOUs. But those of us in the private sector who take out mortgages on our house or on cars or on washing machines or whatever it is, we borrow money, we work very, very hard to pay that back. So to make a claim that there's no backing is bogus.
Eric, that the Patriot community has.
What?
Is that you go to a bank, most people go to a bank, and they're under the impression that the bank, you want to borrow $100,000 for a house or $1,000 for a washer dryer, and most people are under the impression that the bank has gone down into their vault and taken some money out of there.
Well, that may be true, Pastor.
Come up and put it into your account.
Yeah, well, that may be true.
In reality, they have no money. It isn't created until you promise to pay.
Well, but as you said before, we're preaching to the choir here on your show, so I presume that most of the people who are listening to this show already know those basic fundamentals about the Federal Reserve and that the banks don't really loan anything, that they create the money to fund the loan. So who I'm talking to here is the choir, who has been greatly misled about the operation and validity of the Federal Reserve and how it actually works. And these are the people in this country who already know basically how the Federal Reserve works and the basic fundamentals that it's privately owned and all that. So we need these people who already have some knowledge to understand that there's a much better way of funding our government, and it would also stop all this roller coaster boom and bust cycles that we have, which are caused by the interest that is going into the private accounts of the private owners. We don't need to change very much at all about the Federal Reserve, really. All we really need to do is change who owns it so that the interest profits don't go into the private accounts of those who don't deserve it and goes instead into the treasury of the people of the United States.
Well, we've got one more minute left here. What can you sum up for us in 1 minute? Well, let me ask you a question. I want to ask you a question. We do have not even a minute. Question very simple, very quick. Whatever stage someone's in with whatever case they're in, will this shut it down?
It should. And I put it that way, and maybe it seems like I'm equivocating a little bit, but there isn't any way that we can control what they do. What's important here is a position of righteousness. When you know you're right, when you absolutely know that your position is irrefutable, it gives you the strength to stand up for it. And when, government does not exist in nature, that is absolute. There's no way you can be wrong on that. And that they can't get jurisdiction over you unless you give it to them. There's no way that they can prove anything other than that. And when somebody is in any court anywhere and they have that basic fundamental, they know they're right, they have a righteous position, and they can stand on it, and they know no matter what the judge says that the judge is either a liar or what.
We'll see you tomorrow, Monday night, live with Dr. Sam Kennedy.